I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. With me today, as always, is Father Garrett Burns.
Hello.
And Father Drew Hoffman.
What's up?
Today we are laboring away in the St. Teresa Benedicta of the Cross podcast studio.
Is there a reason for that one?
There is, of course, a reason. I do nothing without reason.
To hear it.
Every ounce of this podcast is thoroughly thought through before I open my mouth.
In seriousness, you do.
Probably like too much, actually.
Prepare. It's probably great. No, it's very much. Helpful for us.
No, the reason I picked St. Teresa Benedicta of the Cross, Edith Stein, as she's also known, one of my favorite stories of her is, if you're not familiar with Edith Stein's story, she was born into a Jewish family, late 1800s, started studying philosophy, became an atheist, renounced her faith, became an atheist, and then started coming back towards faith and ultimately Christian and Catholic faith. And the story goes, she was at a party one night and sat down, and just sit on the table next to the chair was St. Teresa of Avila's autobiography. And she picked it up and started reading it just more out of curiosity than anything, ended up reading it through the entire night in one sitting and put it down and famously said, "This is truth." And so it was part of her conversion point and ultimately of her taking the name that she took. But I think it also conveys the point that books have power and what we read can influence us for the better. And that's part of our opening discussion today, a perennial question we like to discuss around here of, what are you reading these days? It's been a little while since we discussed it. So what's new on the books list?
As we're recording this, we'll tell you it's finals week and it's been kind of crazy. And I tried to read a couple of other things new, and I just couldn't. My brain did not have the space or the energy. Uh-huh. And so every few years, I reread my favorite books. So I started rereading a week and a half ago or so, A Canticle for Leibowitz, which is probably my second favorite book. Power and the Glory is probably my favorite book. But Canticle for Leibowitz, which is definitely the book I've read the most. So I started rereading that again. And so there's a comfort to that. And there's new things, but I also don't have to feel like I'm as focused at a time when my brain is like a bowl of jelly.
Mm-hmm.
And so Canticle for Leibowitz is a masterpiece, one of my favorite books of all time, a very rereadable book for me because different pieces. It's about after a nuclear war in the 1960s, it's the rebuilding of society, and it goes through kind of three phases: the monastic rebuilding of society, saving learning. No one really knows what's going on. There's no electricity. There's no anything like that. So the church's role in that. Then Enlightenment, the church's role as electricity is being rediscovered and lights and things like that. And the church's role in knowledge and what role does she have in actually sharing that knowledge that she's created. And then back to advanced society with developing space travel and nuclear weapons again and humanity's likelihood to renew and redo the same things again and again. I love it.
I've never read it, but it's because of your recommendation. It's still on my list. Next time I go to Eighth Day Books, it'll be in the stack that I purchase.
There's a line in there that I use all the time. Speak up, destiny, speak up. Destiny always seems decades away, but suddenly it's not decades away. It's right here, right now. But maybe destiny is always right here, right now, right this very instant, maybe.
That's good.
There's a boy trying to make a vocational decision, and he always thought it was going to be a much later decision for him to have to make. But he's being asked every moment for hard decisions.
That just shows the difference between us. If I just feel like I can't read something new, I rewatch The Office instead of like rereading. It's comforting. I know what's going to happen. I'm not going to be surprised with Jim and Pam. It's just,
I like that.
I'm reading, it was recommended by another priest. It's called Hinds Feet and High Places.
Oh, yeah. That was one of Bishop Jekyll's favorite books. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I was a little hesitant just because I Googled it or whatever. And one of the first things that came up was like, a guide to walk through in your women's Bible study as you read.
That's where I like, heard it first.
So how is this going to go?
I know a lot of college age girls who have like specially designed Hinds Feet in High Places. Beautiful pictures and things like that.
So you've got a lot to live up to.
Yeah. But it's gone along with where I'm at in life. Drew knows this past weekend. I ran in Girls on the Run, a 5K.
I came and watched them.
It was incredible. And there was a lot of glitter.
What is going on in your life right now?
I'm doing okay.
That's so funny.
But I have enjoyed Hinds Feet in High Places. It's an allegory and like very direct of it's not like Lord of the Rings is Christian and there's these Christian symbols, but it's not obvious and one-to-one. You know, Tolkien's big on that. And this is very obvious. Like this person is following the shepherd to the high places. And so, but it just brought out something I heard recently from another priest who I think was said it's in Augustine somewhere, but basically he's saying like to live a life of grace isn't necessarily to do good things and not do bad things, but it's to do courageous and bold things. And to live from our nature of sin is to cower in fear. And that's just been true in my life. You know, I'm living for the Lord and I still do some good stuff and some bad stuff. But when I'm really given over to him, then I'm not allowing fear to dictate my decisions, but just a boldness and a trust in him. So this story is the character is much afraid and they're following the shepherd and trying to get to the high places. And even as their companions are suffering and sorrow, and it just goes through all of this basically. Yeah, to me, of living out that idea from Augustine that to live out of bold courage and trust in the Lord and not from all these fears and shames that are within me.
It's been a while since I read it, but I remember really liking at least the aspect of how it kind of personified those fears and vices and the idea that, if I remember correctly, with the main character, they hold on to them. And so that character, it's hard for them to move forward because they're weighed down by fear that are physical entities that grappled onto them. And this idea that you've got to free yourself if you are to ascend to the heights, you can't take those weights to the heights to follow the shepherd. Then there's the transformation of the character that's taking place. Mm-hmm. And truly, as we follow the Lord, our own hearts and our abilities are transformed from the weak and broken parts that they are to something more. I like those. Yeah. And it was one of Bishop Jakel's favorite books. He highly recommended it. That's why I read it. So I didn't get it from a teen girl, college girl study.
And walking out of a holy hour,
Archbishop Michael Jakels told me to read it.
A future focused missionary female holding Hinds Feet in High Places, special West Coast Catholic edition or something like that.
I got it on the Kindle, so I could have been reading anything on there. Nobody knew.
You get a fake book cover to put like The Godfather or something while you're walking around with it.
Captivating Next or something like that. My goodness.
Any book for fun?
The other one I just started is Joan of Arc by Mark Twain.
Oh, it's sitting behind my chair. I haven't started it yet. Yeah. But
so just started and enjoyed it so far. I mean, he's a great writer. So
supposedly that was like his favorite book he ever wrote.
Yeah.
But I've not read it yet. Now, I just picked up a few days ago. So speaking of St. Teresa Benedict of the Cross and her reading St. Teresa of Avila's autobiography, I just picked up Teresa of Avila's autobiography a couple days. Actually, when I was putting together the notes for this cool little serendipitous, whatever you want to call it, the workings of the Lord. So this should air on June 13th. I will be leaving Avila, Spain that morning. So I'm helping lead a pilgrimage for fathers and sons along the Camino for a couple weeks in Spain in the beginning of June. And then on the way back, I'm stopping at Avila to visit the sites of St. John of the Cross and St. Teresa of Avila. So I started reading her autobiography. I loved Interior Castle. Absolutely loved it, loved it, loved it. So I started reading the autobiography again to warm my heart and prepare for being able to visit her relics and visit Avila itself. So if you're listening to this, I am probably boarding a train back to Madrid to fly back to the United States at the moment.
Fly safe.
Praise God. Hopefully. I hate flying. I really, like I'll drive anywhere. I hate flying. I do not look forward to the idea of crossing the ocean. That's miserable to me.
You can watch a movie, you can take a nap, read a little bit.
I'm going to take Dramamine and like build myself a nest and try and sleep for 9 hours across the Atlantic. That's my plan. For fun, I'm reading A Separate Piece.
Oh,
did
nice.
You guys ever read that?
Yeah, nice school, Fox. Yeah. A shout out, Tracy Fox.
Yeah.
Big fan of the pod.
Is she really?
I don't know. I bet she's listened to maybe one just to make fun of us. Our old English teacher at.
I feel like she would be. We could reel her in.
Wait,
if she's not a big fan of the pod, we just let her know that we're talking about books and she'll become a big fan
of
the pod.
We're talking about her. That's her.
And thing. Talking
her two favorite things, books and her. Come on the pod and defend yourself, Tracy.
The gauntlet has been thrown down. Well, I remember reading it in high school and I remember it like being moved by it. I don't remember exactly why or even that much what it was about. I just remember reading it and we're like, that's a powerful book. So I thought I'd reread it and just see how my adult mind plays with it.
Is it a powerful book?
We're not there yet. I'm about halfway through it. It's fine.
Yeah.
If I'm remembering it right, I remember enjoying it or being struck by something, but also just the high school boy. It's like a friendship of two guys. Right.
Right.
And so there was definitely a ton of dumb jokes from high schoolers about that.
But, and that may have been like why it made so much sense to me as a sophomore. I'm like, these guys are idiots. Yeah. I'm reading it now.
Yeah.
Like,
it's, it would be cool. But there's a lot of those high school books that we read that would hit a lot different at 31 than they do it.
I'm trying to do more 16. Of that. Like I'm remembering books like this summer I read Where the Red Fern Grows, which it was good to reread that. I've got The Outsiders on my desk. One of these days I'm going to get to. So those books that I remember igniting my love for reading, I'm like, I should go back and revisit those. So Separate Piece was the one I picked up this go around. And I've got a stack. My brother signed me up for a subscription to The Sun magazine. It's just kind of a literary short story, poetry magazine. So I got a stack of those sitting beside the bed. I'm slowly working.
He's got a lot of books.
I read a lot.
Too much.
I don't want to brag about it.
Well, and then, you know, let's talk about the encyclopedias that,
that I often
just for fun
flip through.
I mean, this is, you know, some people check Facebook. I work through
check with the
Britannica. Moving on. Today, I want to talk about dating and discernment. I think there's a lot of different ideas about how those two things interact or mingle together or what their relationship is with each other. And I hear a lot of people saying you should be doing A. And I hear a lot of people saying, I really regret doing B. And that was not helpful. People talking about you absolutely should date before you enter seminary and the idea that maybe that's not necessary. And so I'm really curious to hear your guys' thoughts and opinions on this. But first, I want to establish some basic understandings that we know, but there could be the chance that someone listening out there does not realize this. One, if you are in seminary, you should not be dating. So those two things are not mutually compatible. I've had people ask me that before, like, so am I able to date in seminary? No, no, you do not date when you're in seminary.
Looking at you, Father Aaron Spexar.
That's part of Father Aaron's vocation story that he often tells, and it kills every time. My goodness.
If you are in the application process to seminary, you should not be dating. As soon as you legitimately start the application process, that is akin to asking another girl out. You don't ask a girl out while you're dating another girl. You've got to end one relationship before you start
the
others. You got to
come to a college campus, Chaz.
I am hopelessly out of touch.
2022, man.
Now, if you are thinking about seminary, thinking, well, maybe I should go to seminary, I should be... That doesn't exclude you from dating. So occasionally I'll come across a guy like, well, I know I shouldn't date because I'm thinking that I may go into seminary. No, that's not actually what that means. That doesn't mean you have to go out and date, but it also just because the idea of priesthood or seminary in the future doesn't in that moment cut you off from dating and by that healthy dating and that. So I want to establish those ground rules before we go any further with the idea of dating and discernment. And I guess we should also recognize there are good priests who have extensive dating history, and there are good priests with minimal to zero dating history prior to seminary. So it's not like one equates the other. The Lord's going to work in all of that. So with those ground rules present, I don't know, where should we start?
Well, I think that would be part of this conversation is that I think everyone, I don't know what you guys are going to say here, and I don't know that we're going to be on the same page, or I think it'll be an interesting conversation, just as you're saying, because there isn't a black and white for this at all.
At all.
And so to lay that down as the expectation here, there's some of our thoughts and experiences which probably have gone different ways in our personal lives and in men we've ministered with.
I'm just going to let Drew start, because if you thought he had a lot to say about consolation and desolation, he has a lot more to say about dating.
I did get worked up about the consolation and desolation stuff from a couple weeks ago, friends, and I don't apologize for that.
I do not apologize.
That's the stuff that I utilize. I thought about that when I was driving home after recording. It's like, nah, I'm fine. That's the things I talk about the most. So yeah. I gotta be me.
And dating. So and dating. Go for it.
Now we get to my real passion project.
In fairness, I knew that walking in a consolation desolation. So I wasn't at all bothered. I expected that. And I was grateful for that. I didn't realize dating was in that category as well.
Oh, more so.
I'm probably a ride.
And this is the difference here is that I lean on Ignatius when I'm talking about
someone who knows.
Desolation. This is all me, baby. This is just coming.
Someone who may not know.
Part of it, and this was always, we always like making jokes about thinking that we're good at setting people up and stuff, but I live on a college campus. I work in a dating world, and so that's a lot of the jokes that I'm giving dating advice to the students. Where do you hold your hands when you're in conversation? What angle should you be? 45 degree angle when you're in conversation? Eyes, you don't want to, you got where eyes need to be if you're in conversation, how much you're supposed to laugh, a gentle maybe elbow touch. I have a lot of thoughts
you
on
could
this.
Teach a class.
Trust me, I have tried on many occasions here, but this is something on a college campus that I'm very passionate about. where we're starting here, I think one of the first things that we talked about is it necessary for a man to have dated before he joined seminary? Because you will hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, shouldn't you, how can you know you're not meant to get married if you've never dated?
I hear it a lot from parents.
Absolutely. And how there are things you learn in dating about yourself and things like that, the type of man that you are, your desires, hopes, even kind of like community life, it sands you down. Being in a relationship mm-hmm. should sand you down a little bit. And so general thoughts just on that to start the process. Does a guy need to have dated to be a good priest?
My answer is absolutely not.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it can help. It doesn't have to. There's no necessity. It's like saying, well, the Lord can only bring you to where you can be if you do this one scenario. No, the Lord is more powerful than that. You think a 17-year-old girl can provide self-knowledge in a way the Lord can't? Okay. Maybe you need to read Hide Feet on High Ground.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about real life. Yo, go ahead, Gary.
No, I was just saying you both hit on it, but the self-knowledge piece is big and dating can help that, but can you find that in other ways? We've talked about already in a previous pod, friendship, a lot of other ways we can come to that self-knowledge and self-possession. So definitely not 100% necessary, but can be a tool that God would use to bring that.
It's like we were talking early on in the podcast, when do you join, and that people need real life experience. Living with three of your bros and working at the accounting firm, that's not real life per se necessarily. I mean, that's not... Oh, okay, yeah, now I understand how life works. Same thing, dating someone when you're 19 years old isn't giving you an experience of real life. No married couple would imply that ever. And so absolutely not. But it could provide some gifts. And I'll be interested in your guys' thoughts of maybe any personal experiences. I didn't do much before I joined. And I never really thought that was a big deal. There's nothing as a priest now for 5 years that I think I've lacked or I've missed. I think where it can become an issue for guys is that it can become an extra temptation when they're in seminary and a reason to leave, a whispering voice. I never dated. Okay, well, yeah, now I should. And it maybe gives that extra thing that they'll need to speak out loud to hear that is not true. But it's not like if I did date, then another voice just wouldn't kind of fill in that gap.
Yeah. So just personally, in my dating experience, it definitely just helped me come to that self-knowledge, at least at the time. Mine was all pretty much just in high school, so still pretty young at that point. But as you said, some of it's just that friction. I mean, they say this about marriage. I think it's like having to look all of your faults in the mirror every day. It's going to bring that out. And so some of that is there when you're spending a lot of time together because you're dating a person. And it can bring out, for me, some of those, that self-gift that's needed in any vocation, but that there was this other person that I was trying to give myself to, trying to serve to make their day go better, no matter what it meant for my day. So those were all good things. And yeah, I think there was both sides of that. Like you said, it could be this lie in their mind if you haven't dated, of like, I need to have. And it can always just be that in the back of your mind, if somebody you have dated, especially if it's seriously, of like, am I actually called to go marry that person?
Sure.
But then once I'm there at that point and I really want to make that commitment to celibacy, it puts a face on that and I make that choice fully. So there's kind of was a benefit to me in that. Mm-hmm. Again, not necessary, but that was just my experience.
Maybe it's taken for granted. I think we also have to presume when we're talking about dating, we're talking about virtuous relationships.
Yeah.
So obviously it can be detrimental. And I've seen this in people's vocation. If they're entering into relationships that are not Christ-centered, or at least what would the word be? A mid-range, healthy, good, that it's a deterrent to them becoming who the Lord wants them to be. And it feeds vices rather than helping them to know who they are. It feeds their most selfish desires and actually closes in their heart because the relationship wasn't healthy. So when we talk about dating being good or not, I think we're presuming that it's a virtuous dating. If it's not, then you should be getting out of that relationship.
Then you're hurting regardless. I tell that to couples in meetings or individuals in the confessional all the time. You're hurting this relationship. This is hurting this relationship or whatever your future vocation, even if it's with this person, you're engaged. It's damaging a future vocation if we're not moving towards virtue. So yeah, it's a good kind of baseline to put
on. When I taught in high school, I taught Christian vocations. Now, granted, I taught in a fairly small school, Colgan in Pittsburgh. So it's maybe a little bit different reality than a bigger place like a 1,000-member school like Capon or Carroll. But when I taught Christian vocations, every test had one essay question on what is Father Chad's number one rule for high school dating? And all they had to put on there to get full credit was don't.
Yeah.
Because in general, this isn't across the board, but especially in a small school, a small school. There are actually a lot of psychological studies that the development of the human person's mind is better done in group dynamics, where you have a group of friends, both men and women, that you're hanging out, then at 16 years old, we've all known those people that have that boyfriend or girlfriend, and that is the only person they talk with or hang out with, and they're actually stunting their growth in that. And you get into a place like Colgan where it's a small school, and surprise, surprise, those relationships don't work out. And then suddenly this class of 20 kids is fractured down the line, these people, and then it's terrible at times for the community. So Father Chad's number one rule for dating in high school was don't. That's all they need for full credit on that. And I'll stand by that rule.
And I'd support that even as one, like I said, I dated for 3 years in high school. And that's what I tell kids now, because I had Chris Stewart when I was in eighth grade said he had never met a high school couple mature enough to actually date and have a virtuous dating relationship. And so, of course, I was like, well, he hadn't met me. Like,
doesn't that happen all the time? I'm going to be the exception. High school kids all the time. And Gary was as mature of a 14-year-old as I mean, was very mature as a 14-year-old and didn't experience that. I think that says something.
But still, yeah, not really. Not that I regret it or God obviously used it, but I still tell kids today the same thing. Yeah.
And prior to entering seminary, just yesterday, I was at a graduation party. I met a woman I'd never met before, but turned out she was friends with my mom. And so I've never met this woman. Oh, I remember when you were in seminary and I'd go see your mom in the prayer group. And she just kept saying, I wish you'd date more. I'm like, this is a really weird conversation to have with you, woman. I've been a priest for 12 years, but you know, whatever. She just wished you would have dated more. And I think my parents did wish that. Now, what my parents didn't realize, because I wasn't always communicating, I was dating prior to seminary. I just wasn't telling them about it. Like, they were unaware of it. Like, they didn't think I had any dating history going into seminary. I didn't have a lot, and I wasn't very good at it. Like, I look back and I'm like, oh man, I was destined for celibacy. I was really bad at this. And yeah, I look back on my dating history. Did it help me grow some in my knowledge of self? Probably. Was it anything that was insurmountable if I had not had it? No. In fact, one of the telling parts in my vocation story I tell people is I was dating a girl at K-State and I was going to daily mass, and I asked her if she wanted to go with me and she didn't. And so I said, fine, I'm still going to daily mass. So I left her at the house with a group of guys while I went to mass. And I remember walking to mass and realizing, oh, this tells me something about what my priorities are in this. I think in most of my dating relationship at that age was pretty selfish.
Sure.
Not in any terrible, harmful way, but just like even in that scenario, well, she wanted to do something. I didn't really care what she wanted to do. I'm going to go do this. And I look through that and I'm like, there was a lot of that because I was 17, 18, 19. I didn't know anything. None of these were deep, thought-provoking, heart-opening relationships. Can those exist? I'm sure they do. I didn't experience them. And none of my friends were really experiencing that and that I'm aware of.
I think a theme then, if you're a discerning man and you are hearing people tell you, or you are considering, I need to date before I join seminary, cast that out. And if you're a parent or a friend, don't say that to your son in that context. It just is not a helpful aspect. It's not a, if they date, great, but it isn't a necessity for them to join seminary to be a good priest that they've had those dating experiences. Is that fair?
I absolutely agree. I think it goes back, and we've talked about this theme before, that if the Lord is calling that man and he's calling him at that age, because some people, as we talked about in the last part, you know, Father Stewart Long had a later vocation. Other people, you know out of high school. If the Lord's going to call different people at different ages, he's going to provide what they need at that age and that time. And if he's calling a man who's 17, 18, 19 years old, the Lord's not going to say, yeah, come on, but first I need you to spend 6 months dating. I know it's not going to go anywhere, but go ahead and do this and then we'll be. That's not how the Lord works. And the Lord is powerful enough to achieve his ends, whether another person comes out of it or not. That self-knowledge we talk about, that's coming from getting outside of your own head and interacting with another person. That can be accomplished in other ways than dating. Siblings can do that for you. Good friends, working a job, confrontation. All of these things force us to think outside of ourselves and confront a world that we have to compromise with, that we have to see where we are good and bad against. Dating is one of those ways, but it's certainly not the only way to it.
So I think that helps to, and we're not trying to condemn you if you're feeling that about your son or about yourself, like I need to date. Just what is being conveyed there is I need to make sure this isn't all just in my head and it's just all on my own. So I need good, healthy friendships. and work a job and find some ways where I'm serving other people to grow in knowledge of myself and where God is leading me. Because he works through concrete stuff that has happened. Like what you said is very similar to me. Even if a relationship went well, but I noticed I was more drawn to going to mass or I was more drawn to prayer and things like that. Okay, well, that's like a tangible experience that I had that God's working and speaking to me. And so don't push someone into dating, but push them into get outside of the house and go have friendships and go do something that's not just on your own. And then God can work through that. It doesn't have to be through dating.
Now, Chad, I'm really interested in your thoughts here. Serious about a man is discerning and he's in a relationship. A man is having thoughts of the priesthood whilst in a relationship, or having thoughts of the priesthood fairly seriously, but not in the application process or anything, meets a girl he would like to go out on a date. Your experience in vocations, where are you at with some of this stuff? What do you find helpful, not helpful in maybe those two distinct situations?
So I think the second one is the easier one, the idea that a man is applying for seminary and then suddenly he meets the girl of his dreams. It is an often enough scenario that I warn guys against that, like, there's an entire chance that now that you're applying for seminary, your dating life is going to have an uptick in the possibilities. Part of it is maybe the man's mental, I'm giving this up and suddenly this person catches my eye. Maybe it's part of the evil one trying to tempt it. Maybe it's some girl's like suddenly he's off the market and there's a more attractive. Yeah. Or in reality, I think for a lot of guys is suddenly they're not trying as hard. And they're actually a much lot more enjoyable of a person when they're not trying.
Absolutely.
And that catches the girl's attention. And so I warn guys, okay, that's not what that means. And I have had multiple guys, oh yeah, Father, I just met this girl. Well, I warned you. You still got free will. You got to make your choice. We can stop this application process. And I have had guys that have done that. To my knowledge, none of them are married to the girl that they stepped out of seminary for. And several of them have returned at a later date to come back to seminary. It happens. Yeah. Not maybe the road that I would recommend. But so if you're in the application process and suddenly the perfect girl walks in, she's probably not. And that's not a knock against her. That's just a reality.
Let's say he's not in the application process. Let's say he's several months from even starting an application, if that's what he wants to do. But he is thinking about the priesthood. It is something that comes up. He isn't sure if he's called to join the seminary or not. And in that context, he's thinking about dating.
I would say if he has not started the application process, you know, dating's fair game. You've not made a commitment, just like, well, I'm thinking about dating this other girl. I'd like to do it, but I'm not sure if that's... And then some other girl comes in and, well, actually, no, this girl really is moving my heart. Okay. I think if you can make a comparison to that. So I'm not opposed to it. I do think they should continue in prayer on that subject and probably be pretty open with the girl as well, just be able to say, hey, just so you know, I'm interested in dating, or however they want to broach the subject, but say, hey, I'm also thinking about seminary. That's a very real possibility for Maria. I mean, that's being honest with.
Or maybe they're already dating. Maybe they're already boyfriend or girlfriend.
And then
this comes up.
Okay, and I think in that scenario,
the first
too.
Question that I was asking.
Yeah, right.
Communication within that.
Because we know priests like that. I mean, I think several priests have been engaged, have been on the doorstep of marriage, and then now are priests. So it obviously happens. And so what is the right way to work through that? And I think that's a great first point of just honesty with your girlfriend at the time. Say, this is something that God's doing in my heart, and I got to follow that. I don't know what that means right now, but I'm going to be open and honest with you.
Like in Father Stu, when he tells his girlfriend that he's joining the seminary and she thought he was going to propose that day. That's what you don't want it. Right. And I know that sounds dramatic, but that does happen. That does happen. The guys won't tell, just don't tell the girl. And then all of a sudden, what happened? Well, that's not healthy for either party. It's not fair to her, but it's also not healthy for him. And it puts him in, I think, a kind of dangerous situation with his discernment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in those scenarios too, I have known women react in both ways. So like the movie Father Stu, where she did not receive that news very well. I have known scenarios with that. I've also known scenarios where she's been very supportive, where she has actually said, no, if this is where you believe the Lord is calling you, you need to do that, which is actually how I would have liked to see the Father Stu story go, because I think in most of the cases, the women that I have known that are pretty virtuous women anyways and are praying and realize that, well, if this is what God is desiring, I'm not going to put my desires in front of God's desire. And they are the holy women in that regard. So I've known both scenarios where the women have reacted with anger, maybe justifiable, but with anger, and where they've been very supportive. But I think that honesty has to, because it is an injustice and a lack of maturity if you blindside them with it. Even in that movie, the way it was portrayed, Father Stu was an idiot to do it.
Yeah, that was messed up.
Yeah. That was a lack of maturity and understanding of the other person when he did it that way.
It's not a characteristic you want in a priest.
Right. Yeah.
Very true.
Exactly.
Have you read Come Rack, Come Rope?
Mm-mm. I've heard of it. I've not read it.
Awesome. Awesome. Awesome book about the English martyrs and the persecutions. Well, there's that guy and girl in the first half of the book that are dating and getting pretty serious. She breaks up with him and he's confused. And it's because she is confident he's called to be a priest and she wants him to be able to pursue that. And they say, as you're reading that, however you feel about that breakup tells you your vocation. I don't think that's really true. But if you're like, at a girl, oh, you're probably supposed to be a priest or religious. And if you're mad, maybe you're supposed to be married. Don't use that as a test. But Come Rack, Come Rope is a great book for a man to start. It's an intense book, but an awesome book.
Hmm.
The other thing I was going to bring up is that this is just a hard thing because we've heard from women and men in this context that after that conversation or the breakup or even the conversation in general, people are mad, but they don't know who to be mad at. There's no one to be angry with in this context. Because he's discerning, he's doing what he's supposed to be doing. And maybe he breaks off the relationship because he's going to join the seminary. Oh, I can't be mad about that. I want to be mad at God maybe, but I can't be mad at God for calling. And so there can be some difficulty there because things are going as they should, quote unquote, people discerning vocations, but hearts get broken. They just do. Hearts get broken when
life is hard.
It is. And so that is kind of to be expected and not to be shied away from.
And I've known some priests that have gone back and done weddings for former girlfriends or things like that, that the healing, whether they were serious or not, and have ended up doing, everyone wins in that scenario, I suppose, but they go back and do the weddings.
It makes me think of what I usually is more high schoolers, and they're not usually in great relationships, but they're heartbroken after whatever. And I'm just like, okay, well, like, what did you learn about yourself from this relationship or from the end of this relationship? And not just like, what kind of guy or girl do you like?
Yeah.
But like, what did you learn about yourself that you're going to take independent of anything that happens with that guy or girl in the future? And so that could be true even in those cases where it hurts and it stinks and your heart's broken. But that shows a trust that God's doing something even bigger in both lives through it.
When you first started asking your serious question, Father Drew, I thought you were going to ask about the last girl I was dating, pursuing at K-State.
By far my favorite story, and I had hoped we were going to get to it here, but I couldn't remember if you've told it before.
I don't know if I have.
Tell this story anytime we're in public together.
So that story is part of the reason I started this episode with those caveats, because I was applying to seminary and also pursuing a relationship with her because I didn't know you weren't allowed to do those two things at the same time. Nobody ever told me that. And to me, I was looking at seminary not as entering into a relationship with a church, but as applying to a different school. And so in my mind, okay, yeah, I can go ahead and pursue this girl. As I said earlier, I'm really bad at dating decisions. No one should emulate to my example in the dating world.
If only there had been a podcast all those years ago.
If I ever get to time travel, I'm going to go back to past Chad and I'm going to help him so much.
Well, so then what happened? I'm on pins and needles here, man.
Wait till the next episode.
Right. That's right.
Leave them hanging.
The next week's pod is your vocation story.
Leave them hanging.
You can save that if you want to save it.
We'll end with it. So I'd met her in a poetry writing class, which is such,
Wow.
Like every aspect of this makes me cringe and roll my eyes at who I was at this point. But we were two of the better poetry writers in this class. Yeah, we sat together and, this relationship was unfolding as I had hoped while simultaneously I'm applying for seminary and we're both at K-State and I realized
She was not a part.
There was no deep conversations taking place. I realized, okay, I really am going into seminary next year. And because she wasn't one who was, I don't even think she was Catholic, nominally Catholic, not a serious relationship. I can't underscore that enough. Instead of telling her I was going into seminary, which seemed like it'd be really confusing to have to explain, I just told her, we wouldn't be able to see each other because I was transferring to a small liberal arts college in Northwestern Missouri, which is not a lie. Conception Seminary College, small liberal arts college of Northwestern Missouri. So to this day, someday our paths are going to cross again. And if she's listening to the podcast, I'm not going to say her name, but maybe.
Yeah. You know who you are.
You know who you are. And I'm sorry.
That does just remind me, Father Kerry Wakulis, the chaplain at Oklahoma State's Catholic Student Center. He had a pretty serious girlfriend and she had a key to his place. And so sometimes if he wasn't there, she'd show up early or something like that. Well, she showed up at his place and the seminary application is on his desk or something like that. It's out and visible. And he walks in and I think the story goes a six pack of beer is gone and cans start flying at him when he walks into the when he walks in. And so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine that with Father Carey.
Wakulich. We need to get Wakulich on the pod sometime.
Also falls in the scenarios of bad ways to let the girl know. Yeah. Well, thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. I've got the final word today, and it comes from St. Anselm. He says, I pray, Lord, make us taste by love what we have tasted by knowledge. Let us know by love what we know by understanding. See you next week.